July 1931. While Universal Studios' Dracula was still playing to sold-out houses, the studio executives turned their attention to their next box office hit. The Tale of Frankenstein had until then been considered unfilmable, but their writers plucked the essentials from the story, boiling it down until all that remained was a concentrated horror story. After seeing a first test reel, they knew they found their next big project. To today's audiences, Frankenstein's themes seem to be horror clichés, but this movie started them all. The mad scientist gazing upon his resurrected monster, slowly drifting into insanity.
It's alive! It's moving! It's alive! It's alive! It's alive! It's alive! It's alive!
The mumbling and stumbling monster moaning about.
Look out! The lever!
Get away from that lever! You'll blow us all to atoms!
The hunchback assistant doing his own cruel deeds.
Quiet! Quiet!
The direction is nothing short of revolutionary, mixing German expressionist ideals with a healthy dose of wit and black humor that was unheard of at that time. Frankenstein arrives fully formed from the first moment, and even when the scares subside to make way for romance or exposition, it never loses its style. Furthermore, it poses some provoking questions. Can science turn a man into a god? Should the gift of life be placed in a mere man's hands? And once life is granted, what then? Besides, the shocks this movie offers are still potent today. The death of little Maria, who played with the monster as the first person that shows him any affection. The sight of her distraught father carrying the corpse through a fair, her arm bouncing as he stumbled. The music slowly fading away as the celebrating patrons slowly realize what horror they are confronted with. This was a radically fresh concept for audiences and probably the first corpse carried along in a motion picture ever. While scholars argue about the performance of the main cast, Karloff's performance as the monster is undeniably one of the best horror performances of all time. He is as much a playful child as he is a deformed avenger, wrathfully going after his tormentors. Frankenstein went on to earn $12 million at the American box office alone, making it by far the highest grossing film of 1931. And whereas the movie may have gradually lost its power to terrify over the decades, its power to enchant audiences keeps on growing, as new generations discover this labor of life and death. Hello everybody, and welcome to the Monsters of Literature podcast. My name is Lucas, and joining me today will be Dima.
Hello.
Since you have already listened to the narrative, you probably know that today we will be talking about Frankenstein. Now that we heard a bit about the movie that turned the monster into a star, I would like to talk about the general concept of Frankenstein, since, in the general sense, we mostly do not talk about the book or a movie adaptation, but rather the pop cultural phenomenon. One question that we see a lot is whether the story is still relevant today. And I think it's hard to come up with a simple yes or no answer. So, Dima, what do you think? Is it still relevant? What are your thoughts on this topic?
Yes, definitely. The influence of Mary Shelley's creation, even 200 years later in the present day, is obviously still pretty substantial. Numerous adaptations and parodies of Frankenstein's monster contribute to the infamous figure of the tall zombie man that we all know today. Though its appearance nowadays is not quite like in a novel, like for example the distinct green skin of his that most modern adaptations show, used to be yellow. Nonetheless, it became a monolith of modern horror, a very popular choice of Halloween costume, and the inspiration for many authors and playwrights alike.
Yeah, the green skin definitely comes from Boris Karloff's performance. It's just kind of funny that when you put Frankenstein's monster into Google, the first 9 images, yes, I actually looked it up, the first 9 images depict Boris Karloff. His portrayal is so iconic that it pushed every other portrayal out of the collective memory. And it's still everywhere. Halloween decorations all look like Boris Karloff.
It took a while to get there though. Frankenstein's monster, as it was depicted in the early days of movies, was something utterly terrifying to the innocent eyes of the audiences. James Whale's movie from 1931 would certainly not have the same effect on modern viewers. It would probably come off as something like a parody, a comedy horror. So many cliches combined into one movie and the ridiculous looking monster with over-the-matting acting.
Yeah, but that movie is the mother of bad horror cliches. The mad scientist, the rattling chains, in that iconic laboratory.
True, and it's only natural that the concept of horror movies evolved alongside our culture. Nowadays we have a great variety of modern genres next to the tributes for the older ones. Alternative timelines where the world's population gets infected by a virus that turns everybody to zombies, like we see in Zombieland, I Am Legend, and 28 Weeks Later. Being locked inside an uncanny space that slowly drives the dwellers insane, like we see in 1408 and The Cube. Or straight up torture porn, full with gore and other nasty ideas, like in Saw and The Hostel. Not exactly my cup of tea, but to each their own, am I right? But even amongst all those films, Frankenstein's, or rather his monster's impact, is still visible, and was, without a doubt, one of the catalysts to create the horror many enjoy today.
Speaking of movies, there's actually a new one coming out. Not about the monster, but about the life of Mary Shelley, the female author of the book.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one.
She wrote this novel in 1818, a time where it was outrageous that a woman wrote a book. But she overcame all these prejudices and came up with the story that we still talk about today. And this is all we have time for today. Thank you very much for joining me, Dima.
Thanks for having me.
And we see you in the next episode.